English contains a bunch of funny words. Frequently, there is a story behind how we got these unusual words. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. Today, I'd like to explore some of the words that have come into the English language from commerce, from industry. Particularly in the 20th and the 21st century, companies made products that became so successful that the people of the United States simply adopted the brand name for that product as the generic name. This is not an exhaustive list. There are more brand names that have become the generic term for a type of product, but this is a sampling, and the reason I chose these is they're fun, they're interesting, they're common, and they will generate some discussion. I don't want to give you a word list. That's boring. I want to give you stories. And so each one of these words that came into the English language from commerce has its own story. We might start with this. As you look at this, this is a box of facial tissues. If you go into a store in the United States and ask for a box of facial tissues, you may get a strange look. The person helping you might know what you're talking about, but if you go into that same store and ask for Kleenex, you'll get these. Now, this is not Kleenex because it's not the brand name. It's another brand. But if you go to a store and ask for Kleenex, you'll find this and other similar products. You'll also find Kleenex brand products in a lot of stores. While you're in that same store, you might ask for some of these. You can see that these are little short sticks. These are made out of paper, cardboard, and then at the end of the stick is a ball of cotton. These are called cotton tip applicators. You could go into a store and ask for cotton tip applicators, but most people in the United States call these Q-tips. That's a brand name that became the common term for this product. And again, while you're in that same store, you might buy some of these. This is an adhesive bandage. If you cut your hand or your finger, you have a cut on your skin, you might want to apply a Band-Aid, and by peeling off the protective strips, you expose the adhesive, and then it can be applied to the cut, to the wound. This is an adhesive bandage, but most people in the U.S. call it a Band-Aid. That's the brand name. This particular product is from a competitor and was not marketed as a Band-Aid. It was marketed as an adhesive bandage. There are many healthcare products where the brand name became the common term. Aspirin, for instance. Aspirin was a brand name for acetylsalicylic acid. Frequently, brand names are fairly concise and easy to say, and sometimes a generic term is a lot longer. So it becomes very natural for people to adopt the use of the shorter brand name, and over time, it becomes the standard way of naming that product. Aspirin is a great example of that. Most people in the United States have no idea what acetylsalicylic acid is. But if you say aspirin, they all know what you are talking about. If someone goes to their dentist and needs to get a procedure like a filling, for instance, they might get a local anesthetic. People refer to that local anesthetic as Novocaine. Novocaine was an old local anesthetic used years ago. It is no longer used in dentistry. It has too many problems, too many side effects, and there are many safer medications to use for local anesthesia. The industry leader is Xylocaine. That's another brand name, and it is commonly used when describing lidocaine. Lidocaine is the generic term. People have various hormones helping to regulate their various systems, and one of those hormones that we all have, it functions in all of us, is called epinephrine. It's a neurotransmitter. It tends to make the heart beat faster. It tends to make people more alert. It has been described as the fight or flight hormone that readies us for some emergency. There was a pharmaceutical company that made a preparation of epinephrine and sold it under the brand name of adrenaline. Adrenaline became part of the English language, and if you talk to someone who is frightened and their heart is pumping very rapidly, they may talk about an adrenaline surge. But adrenaline is the brand name. The generic term, the scientific term, is epinephrine. Leaving the life sciences and healthcare, if we go to a fuel station, we might buy some kerosene. Kerosene is a great example where the brand name was very concise and the generic term is very long. The generic term for kerosene varies and can include hydrocarbon fuel, middle distillate of petroleum, paraffin, and lamp oil. Most people in the United States simply call it kerosene, which was an old brand name. If you play table tennis, you might say that you are playing ping pong. Ping pong is a term used around the world to describe table tennis very concisely. Ping pong was a brand name used by a company that marketed products used in table tennis. Major corporations create products and we use them. And again, they can become so popular that the brand name becomes the common term. Scotch tape is a product marketed by 3M, and that is the brand name for adhesive tape. While we're on the subject of 3M, we can recognize that Post-it Note is another brand name that became used commonly to describe an easily removable note with a weak adhesive. We just call them Post-it Notes. While we're on the subject of office supplies, you might recognize this. This is a felt tip marker, but nobody calls it a felt tip marker. It's a Sharpie. Sharpie makes felt tip markers with a relatively fine or medium fine point. Sharpies are everywhere, but that's a brand name that became the common term. This is Tupperware. It's a modern piece of Tupperware. This is not the original type that they made. Mr. Tupper created storage containers for use in the kitchen, and his company, Tupperware, manufactured them for decades. Their headquarters was in Kissimmee, Florida. Originally, they were made entirely of polyethylene, and the original Tupperware containers had a lot of impurities in that plastic, so now it is not safe to use old Tupperware because product safety standards were not very good when Tupperware was invented. Tupperware had an interesting history because they had a peculiar marketing scheme. Tupperware in the United States was sold almost entirely by people, predominantly ladies. They were selling to their friends and friends of friends. the marketing strategy was for a sales representative to host a Tupperware party in their home. People would come over and place orders for their Tupperware. Typically, Tupperware was not sold in stores. I am not certain that that marketing method was generalized to the rest of the world. I do know that people in various countries refer to food containers for food storage, for instance, in the refrigerator, as a tupper or as Tupperware. The name is known worldwide. In the United States, it is arguable that the peculiar marketing strategy has led to the downfall of the Tupperware Corporation. Until very recently, they were simply not sold in stores. So if people perceived a need to purchase Tupperware products, they had to find a distributor and find someone willing to take their order. What they actually found was that other companies like Rubbermaid had much more conventional marketing plans, so they could go to a discount department store or a grocery store and buy a Rubbermaid product immediately. It was much less cumbersome, and that allowed competition to overtake Tupperware. In recent years, their business has gone way down. Their headquarters has been shuttered, and they entered into Chapter 11 bankruptcy. As I understand it, the Tupperware brand was purchased by another company. The modern trend with tuppers is toward a product like this, where the bottom is glass and the top is plastic with a gasket. This is a more modern product, and this is a Tupperware product. This has Tupperware printed right on the lid. I can remember when I was a child, my mom discovered the existence of Xerox machines. My dad's office had a Xerox machine, and my mom would drive down to the office to copy documents on the Xerox machine. Well, a Xerox machine is a brand name. You probably know that the generic term for a Xerox machine is a photocopier. So in reality, my mom was going to my dad's office to use the photocopier, but she called it the Xerox machine. Early in the 20th century, there was a product that got a lot of attention for household use, and that was the vacuum cleaner. One of the major makers of vacuums was Hoover Corporation. They still make vacuum cleaners. Frequently, people simply call that device a Hoover. Now, this is where my wife really amused me. When we first got together, one of the things we shared was vocabulary, because our life experience up until then was a bit different. Her dad was quite a bit older than my parents, and so she was taught expressions that he learned in the very early part of the 20th century. Some of those expressions to the modern ear were rather humorous. One day we were having a meal and I was very hungry, and she discerned that I had eaten my meal rather quickly. She didn't get upset with this. She simply observed it, and then she remarked to me, she said that I had hoovered up my dinner, as if I had picked it all up in a vacuum cleaner. I had vacuumed the meal off the plate. I found that term very amusing. And it all goes back to a brand name. And then we should just finish this off with an obvious one, a modern term of art that came out of commerce and became the standard term. If you look something up on the internet, you're going to Google it, right? But you may not use the Google search engine. Google is an internationally known search engine. But we don't call it a search engine. We call it Google. And that brand name, Google, has become a verb because you can now Google something. As I said when I started, this is not an exhaustive list. Trivia about brand names that have gradually become the generic term for a product is all over the internet. If you're interested, you can find huge numbers of examples of such terms that have come into the English language. As you know, on the Input English channel, I put a lot of emphasis on noticing things. Mind you, I don't talk about writing things in a notebook, making lists, or memorizing anything. We want to keep our subconscious mind active in this language learning process. Remember, we are trying to acquire English, not study it and memorize it. Spoiler alert, you can't memorize English. It won't work. But you can acquire it by hearing and reading lots of it. I put a lot of emphasis on listening because listening has the added benefit of giving you the phonemes of the English language. Listening allows your brain to understand what the words sound like. With enough input, your brain will import those phonemes, and when you try to say a word in English, your pronunciation will be excellent and more native-like. You get a lot of advice on the internet that you need to practice pronouncing words. And I have already labeled that many times as really, really bad advice. What you really want to do is import all these sounds into the brain and then let your natural talent for learning languages give you the pronunciation. If you hear words pronounced correctly enough, then when you try to say them, your pronunciation will be very good. Unfortunately, trying to practice pronunciation without enough input usually just reinforces non-native pronunciation. I hope you enjoyed this. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.